Good evening. We are very thankful that all of you are here. We wanted to make sure that we got the research that we were involved in correct. We had great advisory team members, of which we have two here tonight. We have both Gail Smith-Seely and Lydia Gardner here, who are here tonight, and we're happy to have both of you here, as well as we had research assistants, both Jody Kreshmer, who is here to my right, as well as Melissa Sartori. I was getting stuck on her maiden name, but Melissa Sartori just recently had a baby, and so she had contributed through this, but she certainly sends her regards to everybody and is thankful that we're continuing this work. And then my co-PI on this project has been Dr. Claire Kalpakjian, and so we have worked to make sure that we had a partnership that was through the university. And when we look to do that, we always want to make sure that we made sure that the individuals who were going to be being treated in the community were the ones who would have a say about what kind of treatment we may have and how might that be impacted for the community at large. So it was an academic and community partnership that we came together to do to address the gynecological and reproductive health research for women with physical disabilities. And so we got together about 2 years ago now. Is that when we first started talking about this? Mm-hmm. And so when we started to talk about it, we were looking at different types of services that were being offered in the community and what were those experiences for people that were experiencing the healthcare interactions when they would go out into the public venues to receive treatments. And so we were looking at having the research be informed by people with disabilities so that we could help to inform practitioners about the experiences, the problems, the differences that could come out in the end, and how we could try to help inform the future programming by having the advisory committee helped to inform how we create public policy, how we create changes in systems, and how we can work together so that we can have the outcomes be what we as people with disabilities might like to see it be. In this partnership, the work is stronger because we're working together towards the end goal, that we're better together, better working as one than as individuals. So just to go to the other piece, again, further about why we did it, again, this partnership of being together, women with physical disabilities were better able to tell us and make many important decisions in their life about their gynecological reproductive health and being able to choose throughout their lives what aspects they want to address, not necessarily the aspects a practitioner may want to address. So they were able to share many different experiences that they had had. But what also is happening is that they face many barriers that they wanted us to make sure that we knew. We wanted to know them so that we could help inform the practitioners about what would happen next. And so we did this project to build the capacity of research and to build the capacity of research partnerships between the university and the community to engage with women with physical disabilities living in Ypsilanti and Ann Arbor communities and to learn about their concerns about the area of their own health, about their own experiences that they had had. How did this work? What did we do? We hosted several focus groups in which we invited women with all types of physical disabilities to come and share their experiences. We had both of ourselves as the co-PIs and some of our research advisory team members were at those focus groups, as well as some of our research assistants at different of the focus groups, and we were able to take in the content to some questions that we had developed through the research advisory team, looking at how we might go about gathering this information. And what we're going to be able to talk about today is some of those findings that came out of it. And so what we want to do is be able to go over some of these findings and themes and then hear if these are things that you think are part of this, the schematics that you experience? Are there pieces that we missed? Are there things that we'll want to know more of? And where do we go from here? What will be next steps? And so what we invite you to all do is to also be able to take part in this community conversation. So it is not just us doing this presentation. We really want it to be an interactive session. And so after we go through the next several sets of slides, then we'll open that forum up a little bit more.
Okay.
I'll turn it over to Jody.
Actually, Claire first.
I don't know how many of you are familiar with the type of research that we call qualitative research, and that's it really getting people's to share their experiences, and then we take all that they said and we try to put it into, for lack of a better word, bins that represent some important ideas about what they're experiencing. And so this is technically called a coding structure, but really what it is as we read through everything that people told us, and this is quite a long process, we have to go back over it many times, we started to think about, well, what, you know, if they're saying something important, what does that reflect? Is it, I can't access the care I want, I'm not sure how to make a decision. These are the sort of things I experience that really impact how I feel when I go to my physician. Usually that's what it is. So this is called the coding scheme, and this, as we go through and we look at what people told us, we keep refining it. So this is after going through it a couple of times, and it's maybe halfway there. Mm-hmm. So we're really not quite there all yet. So one thing that we'd like to be able to take away from this is, and we can come back to this at the end, is, you know, do these things make sense? Are there are there areas that that maybe we should think about applying to what we learned? And so Jody's going to present a number of comments that reflect these. So these are verbatim things that women said in these focus groups. And I will say that there's a term called reaching saturation, and that means as you do these groups, you start hearing the same thing over and over again because these are common experiences. I mean, we reached it like right away, which tells us that what the women told us is pretty commonly experienced, these issues, and like I said, we'll get into the details about what these were. So, excuse me. So altogether, we had 260 comments that we thought were important among three focus groups and two interviews, which is quite a lot. So these are unique statements that people are making. And again, when we looked at them, we tagged them with these topics. And we're going to talk about, excuse me, some of the major ones that came up. I will say, I think this has a laser pointer. So not surprisingly, a lot of what people talked about were barriers to care. And these are the ways we thought about what those barriers might be. So the environment, and that's, you know, getting through doorways, getting onto tables, getting off tables, getting onto equipment, doing it safely. And a lot of comments about attitudes. And that's attitudes of healthcare staff, healthcare workers, or physicians, and the stereotypes that they experience. We also thought about knowledge barriers. So many women said, nobody knows what to tell me what to do. Can I have a baby? Is it safe? I don't know. Or feeling that they had to do all the educating. And communication, and that was another thing of, you know, who starts the conversation, who continues it, and really, like I said, educating others. So this, you can see, was quite a large section. And there were about, out of the 260, now some statements had multiple ways that we could have coded them, but over 200 were related to these barriers. So the majority of of things had something to do with some kind of barrier. And when Jody and I went through a lot of these, we're having a lot of trouble with how to think about attitudes, yes, you know, what to call it, stereotype. We're still stuck. Maybe you guys can help us.
Yeah, we need help with that.
It's hard to think because it's very multi-layered, as you'll see when people talk. You know, some of the themes that emerged later were like what a woman says to herself, what she thinks, in her own mind as she's going through these encounters.
So, and also some of what, because of what she's heard in society, which she then starts to think to herself about her comments as well.
So, none of this is really simple. The easiest thing is getting on and off a table. That's about the simplest thing. All the rest is more complicated.
And even getting off and off the table was sometimes
that's not even that simple.
Sometimes a big barrier.
We also looked at making decisions. And this is an area that I do research in women's health. And really, there isn't a whole lot out in the literature that really guides a physician to help a woman make a decision about pregnancy, birth control, a lot of things that really have a lot of meaning in her life. So there were a number of, about 69 comments out of 260 were related to this. There's a lot of anxiety over pregnancy and using birth control, as you'll see. Relationships also came up, relationships to a spouse or significant other, to other women, to family and friends. And then we also, not surprisingly, had some that had the direct effects of disability and then the impact on quality of life. So this gives you an idea of how we are currently thinking about everything that the women told us. So it helps to organize a lot of information. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of words that we're going through. So now I'm gonna let Jody take the first half. And So this is kind of a reiteration. These are the five areas that we're gonna talk about tonight. These are the most common themes. So I'm gonna turn it over to Jody, who's gonna go over these statements that women make. And we're a small group. Feel free to, chime in and give your thoughts about it. So the first set are facing stereotypes. This is the word we're still having trouble with, what to call these things. So you may have some idea of what you might call it when you have some sense of what women are saying.
Okay, like Claire said, we're going to go through some quotes that we found in the research that we thought most exemplified what we were seeing. The first quote is, "I think for me, when I went to the OBGYN and told her I wanted to have kids, she looked at me like I was nuts. She was a very forward person, and so she said, 'Are you sure you want to do this?' It kind of put a seed of doubt in my mind, like, why can't I? I think we need to make sure that our medical providers are encouraging, other than just all of a sudden saying, 'No, you can't do this because you're in a chair.'" We've seen a lot in our research of physicians thinking that because someone's in a wheelchair or things of that nature have assistant aids, that they automatically need help when sometimes they just want to be independent and be able to talk to their physician in private.
So lots of assumptions.
Yes, lots of assumptions.
Which right now we're calling stereotypes, but I don't think that's really quite the right word. Any thoughts on this? Okay, we'll keep going. Okay, here's another example.
Okay. At one point she said to me, "You definitely want to be on birth control because you don't want any more problems. You've got enough to deal with. That was hard to take." A lot of this is, again, with the stereotypes of a person or a woman with disabilities having a baby and being able to take care of it and all of the extra things they may not need, that the physicians don't really realize that the person with the disability can have a child, or it's their choice whether they want to have a child or not. But the physicians think, "Oh, it's too much for you. You already have enough going on in your life. So why would you want to deal with that?"
Mm-hmm. So from the some prejudice and some judgment that's being stated, so that we have that on
judgment.
The recording too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, one size fits all. That's a good, I take notes while we talk.
When I say you don't want any more problems, you've got enough to deal with, I also see the physicians saying they don't want the problem because they don't know what to do. So it's easier for them, so they don't have to deal with it, to just say it's not a good idea for you guys to do that. Because they don't have the knowledge. They don't know what to do.
And sometimes it's part of what we've heard, too, is that they don't have the experience of it, so they don't understand what we've all learned as people with disabilities, how we make the adaptation to make those things successful for us.
Right? And as you see, once we get going into this, too, it's a lot about the patient educating the physician that, oh, I can do this, I can do that, or just the physician asking questions to their patient about different areas of their life.
Not making assumptions. Mm-hmm. There was one, I don't know if it's a statement in here because there's so many, but one woman said, kind of to your point, Lydia, she said, you know, I think they were, maybe the physician was asking about sex, and she's like, no, and she said, I knew they were relieved. I could tell they were relieved because they're going, okay, I don't, just keep going. Like they didn't have to deal with it. So I think that that may be some of what's coming into some of these statements. Okay. Same topic.
But it has been a little awkward because, first of all, people don't even realize that I can dress and undress myself. So that education thing is there. And again, there's no way I'm going to take anyone to that because it's amazing how they figure out that they need to redo stuff if no one's sitting there with you. But if someone walks you in, the assumption is that they're there to take care of you. Part of this quote comes from a background of one of the ladies in our focus group came in with a taxi driver, and he just walked her in just to make sure she got where she was going. And they're like, oh, is he there to help you? She's like, no, I'm here on my own for my own appointment. He's just here to make sure I get in and be okay. So there's an automatic assumption of helplessness or needing someone to be there with you.
Okay. Take a note.
I call it the invisibility issue. I found I pretty much insist on going to appointments alone because if I don't go alone, it's a mistake to even have a cab driver walk in with me because the assumption that there's assumption is that they are there to take care of me, that they know all about my information, that they're going to fill it out and they're going to help me in things that I don't do. They're going to help me with things that I don't or do need help with.
So there's a lot of discussion that we heard from people was a lot about that piece of not being recognized as being their own expert, their own knowledgeable person to be able to state what they needed, wanted, and where they wanted to go with their care.
An extension on this is when there are three people having a conversation and one of them happens to be having a disability or is challenged in some way. So the two that don't have that challenge then talk to one another in place of asking the third person to chime in. It's you're there, but you're not.
Right. Yeah, that's what she's talking about. Yeah, that, and that came up a number of times.
Just ordinary conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. All right, so the next topic is the need to educate others about their disability. So that really the burden being on them.
From what I understood, I was the first woman with a disability that she ever delivered a baby for. So I don't think she had enough under her belt to say, here's this. Like, give me education as far as if I had any questions. I know myself and I know my limits and what I can and cannot do. So I wasn't nervous about it at all. But I was considered a high-risk pregnancy. basically what we're taking this is in our research is knowing ourselves, knowing the participant, knowing themselves and knowing their disability. So the doctor may have the textbook explanation of, oh, this is what a disability is, this is how it's supposed to be, but what we found is our participants are looking at themselves as the experts of themselves and knowing what they can do and what they can't do and how physicians need to learn how to follow the patient's lead. I found that even if they had come across disabilities in the past, I'm so far from the textbook explanation. So I go up front and just explain me. Not necessarily my disability, because we are all extremely different, but just me, because I'd rather them get it right the first time than do it 5 times wrong and be like, oh, by the way, so it's a quicker process. Nobody likes to be poked and prodded. Whether or not they want to listen to that, it's totally up for debate. But I will say what needs to be said first and then hope and hope they take it.
Anybody have any experiences or comments related to this particular quote or what experiences you may have had or you may have heard others have?
I think she was saying, you know, I just.
Okay.
So I just go right in and tell them. I don't wait for.
Okay, so yeah. Not go to the front desk, but
no,
go right to the doctor.
Right up front.
To the physician.
Yes.
Like when the.
Oh, up front. Okay, not go up to the front. I got
go
it.
Go up front, yeah. These
okay.
are verbatim. We didn't edit
right,
anything.
Right, right, right.
So when she was talking about this, it was about when she first goes into the appointment. Rather than waiting for them to start asking her questions or explain it to her, she's able to just state what's going on for her so there's no question on the table that's already unturned.
She just gets to the point. And not everybody does. People vary on, you know, their comfort with doing that right away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's a good thing. I mean, I think that's a good thing to do. That's what I do seeing physicians usually is to let them know up front what's going on. Because, you know, number one, they usually don't know. And when they said it's a quicker process, it is a quicker process.
Right.
You know, not that they shouldn't be educated, but how are they going to get educated if no one educates them? Because mm-hmm. there's not much in a textbook that's going to tell them anything or give them an explanation, really.
Mm-hmm. And it's a burden.
That could be seen with anyone.
Yeah, right.
I mean, anytime you go to a physician, no two patients are alike. No two histories. You can walk in and you can have four people walk in and they could come from extremely different backgrounds, extremely different. So they're assuming, making a lot of assumptions or they, if you come up and talk to them, they're going to be very hostile about it
mm-hmm.
because they don't know. So it depends on if they're willing to. And that's something that could be in the educational process for healthcare professionals.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's exactly actually, you know, we say this in other areas where when we do things right for people with disabilities, it's usually right for everybody else, too.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So it helps to open the door. If we can get them to open the door for women with disabilities, it'll open the door for all patients, maybe, right?
And I don't know if we have this quote in there, I forget, but one of the participants say they've learned how to communicate with their physicians by trial and error. Seeing how the physicians react to them and then what information they need to give to the physicians. So I think a lot of it is based on, especially the part where they're saying going up front and telling them is based on past experiences. So being able to build off that and know that it's best to be able to explain things because every situation is different.
Okay, I have one comment.
Yeah.
This is across the board, whether it's this issue or any other. I've heard the category of patient-centered or person-centered approach to things, where they listen, the doctors, the professionals listen, and then we say our part, as opposed to why I'm currently thinking of changing my doctor. Having walked in and said, you know, I have this issue, and she walked right by me and went immediately to her computer to see what other people had said and quoted and regurgitated.
About what you had said.
About what I came in for.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And she ordered medicine that I didn't need. And I said to her, what about the issue I came in for? And it was very denigrating. And she says, well, there's just some things medicine can't explain. And she sort of patted me on the shoulder, as I said, in my walker, waiting for a better explanation. So the point here is, now that I know this word, patient-centered or person-centered, when I have that kind of treatment, I'm not going to bother with them. It's a big bother to change up doctors. But I want to be in a conversation that leads someplace to gather the information, to feel that I am entitled to a quality life.
Absolutely. Yeah, that desire, that the need to have a conversation. And I think a lot of times when problems arose, it was generally because the question wasn't being asked, or there were assumptions, and that wasn't a dialogue. And the fact of the matter is, not everybody is bold. Not everybody is comfortable. And part of that is just people's personalities. And so it can be a bigger burden for some people than others to have to have to start that conversation, have to have that be on them to make sure that that happens. Yeah, probably because she didn't know what to do. It's not a comfortable position, and many healthcare providers are not trained to not know what to do. Yeah.
I think there's one other thing that's real important, and it was in a conversation I had earlier. It has to do with wanting to get what you want and not dealing with anything else, and I've been kind of weak in that area. Like, you know, I have to stand back, but I'm getting to a point where I don't have as much life ahead of me as I have behind, and I want to live. So I'm getting a little bolder, and I feel these barriers come up. I'm acquainted with them, but I still don't know how to go and assert myself, except I don't like you. I'm going away.
Yeah. And it comes more naturally to some people than others. And just observing the groups, you could see, you know, when women make statements, it sort of fit kind of how they carried themselves. And when they had more trouble, it sort of fit with, they were, you know, may have been shyer, quieter, and it was just who they were. But they had to push to get to that place.
And I think one of the other things in the study that we did see is that then when they felt like they weren't alone, when they could see that there were others that were experiencing some of what they were experiencing, then we would get more open dialogue around a particular question or a particular area. And that's one of the things that when each of us are in our own physician's office or our own pharmacy or our own healthcare provider of other kinds, is that when we're being seen, we're usually being seen ourselves. We're not being usually seen where everybody gets to ask questions at once to get their answers. And so it's not that every time you go in, you always have all those other supporters at your footstead, so to speak. And so trying to help find a way that they felt comfortable to share is, I think, part of what might be when we get to talking about next steps that I think is important is we have lots of places where physicians go to find things, and where do we go as patients to find things, or where do we go to be supportive of each other through blogs or other things like that might be out there so that people know what's happening.
What I've done, and this is within the past year, with regards to this patronization and down pushing down, is I've dropped out. Never going to a doctor again. Mm-hmm. Don't want to deal with you. And what's helped, I mean, that's good to a point. But what's helped are things like this where people get together and they bring up their concerns. So I hope to see more of it.
Mm-hmm. I would say that the times that women talked about good experiences, it was almost always because the doctor asked questions and they listened. And they had a attitude of like, well, you know, we'll figure this out, and and we'll just take care of what needs to get done, to, you know, with that attitude of openness and togetherness. And that's really, I think, what the key ingredient seemed to be. That was my observation when people talked about what went right. And certainly we focused on what was not right. It's not, we didn't go into these with like, tell us everything that's going great. So we have a little biased point of view, but when people did say it went well, that's usually why it went well, which makes sense. Yes, right. It wasn't, it's not like, really? We never thought of that. I mean, it makes sense.
And I think what was really good about that is that really reinforced, too, some of those pieces. When people did share their good experiences in the groups, mm-hmm. then you got the whole group saying, yeah, that's how I want it. I want that experience, too, or I want those kinds of things. And so we were able to see when these areas that fit into these bins that we're talking about for categorizing these themes happened, it was because those pieces were needing to be built stronger, or they needed to be connected, or they needed the support, or they needed the collaboration with the partnership of their physician with them, mm-hmm. or things like that.
Yeah.
And I would just like to add with what Carolyn was saying, when people did have positive experiences, it seemed like the sense of the room changed, mm-hmm. and people became more optimistic, like, really, there's something out there that can be done like this or that or another thing. Like, I didn't know about this. So it opened more doors for the participants we had, and also just kind of changed the vibe in the room for a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, there's another one.
Our next quote, it kind of goes off what we still have been talking about, but it says, I'm so tired of them not knowing. It's like, what did you learn in school with all these years of books and stuff? What disabilities were you taught? So it's like, the older I'm getting, the more frustrated I'm getting. Because it's like, okay, come on now, get up to date. Everyone else is up to date. Why can't you take me up? Why can't you take me up to date with all this? And I would just like to say, that when I told my physician that I was going to be helping out in these focus groups, she said, when the information's out there, can you give it to me? Because we haven't. She's a very open person, and she was very comforting to me when I first started going to her, but she said, I don't really know that much about disability, mm-hmm. and so this will really give me a gateway to kind of start learning more about it, because like this quote says, you learn things about things in textbook, but then someone comes into the room and it's like, okay, what am I supposed to do? I only know the diagnostic part of this angle, and so I thought that was.
Or one of those other pieces that was shared in it is they may know the diagnostic, they may even know what they wanted to do, but then they don't know how to go about it if somebody's
yes.
physique is different, or if somebody's pain tolerance or experience tolerance is different than what a previous patient yes. or the textbook said it was supposed to be mm-hmm. to them.
Because not everybody's the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did a presentation in New Jersey on this topic at a rehab center, and one of the physicians in the audience, who apparently never talks because everyone was amazed that she said anything, said, you know, as a physician, I don't know what to do because I'm not a gynecologist, but there's no one out there I can send this person to. Mm-hmm. So I'm in this really difficult position of, I don't have the knowledge to help them, but I have no one to go to do it. And she really felt very conflicted over how to help her patients. And like I said, a few people remarked after, like, she never says anything in meetings. So they really felt like this was something, a really important thing, because the fact that she said anything, apparently, and brought it up. So I don't think it's, I think your physician's experience, which I think probably explains a lot of the, you know, not knowing what to do, and then that never goes anywhere, you know, good. If you can't say, I don't know,
and right,
let's try to figure it out.
You know, that's what I would, I mean, myself as a patient, if somebody doesn't know, I want them to tell me they don't know. We can figure it out later together, but if you don't know and you don't answer, then that's not helpful. So, yeah.
Our next quote is, I told them that I was going to be challenging, that I'm high tone, and that sticking things in there is not a comfortable situation. So it's really about having good communication between the two of you. She was able to tell me, here's what I'm going to do now, and here's what I'm going to do in a minute. That helps with controlling my body the best way I can. So again, it's mostly about educating the physician on your own unique experience with your disability and just being your own person as itself. Because your disability is part of you, but it's not all of you.
I'm gonna skip ahead to
our next thing.
Oops, sorry, I think I skipped ahead too much. Yeah, so that gives you a pretty good sense of the issue of educating others. So the next topic is how disability directly impacts this area of health. So I was thinking of this one. That's a good one.
That one, okay. I just found out it's hard to talk to really mostly all the doctors that I talk to about contraception for specifically managing periods because they don't want me having an IUD because I can't feel it if it's misplaced. And they don't want me on the pill because of my higher risk of blood clotting. And they're like, well, if you need contraception, just use a condom. Well, condoms aren't going to help me with managing my cramps and figuring out what I'm going and figuring out when I'm going to have my period. I just feel like I keep hitting a dead end at each option at this point. So there was a lot of talk, especially I think this comes from the first focus group, about contraception. And again, speaking to your physician openly about it, one of our participants raved about her physician, said she was very open about women's lib, and she would talk to her about all different things. And then we have this participant that was talking about her doctor really didn't want to talk about contraception, and it was just a topic she kind of wanted to skip over, and so it was interesting to see the dichotomy between the two different women in that group and what their experiences were like.
And they exchanged phone numbers at the end, right. So I think hopefully she'll have a little different story.
I think what was also really important about that one that hit the nail on the head for me was that when the second woman who was looking for a way to look at alternatives to contraception was really, she was looking at a way to make her life more simpler or easier during her periods. It had nothing to do for her at that point in time about contraception for birth control. It was about figuring out how to manage her periods and how to be able to time them better and to be able to know what she was going to do differently. But her physician, at the experience that she was sharing, was not willing to hear what she was needing from the experience. And so that was what was difficult to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she wasn't answering her question.
I know personally for me, it's really hard to get a pap smear because the way my legs are. I often have to have several people in the room. I'm not a person that's ashamed or embarrassed of that, but I know that that could be an issue for other people. We saw a lot of this in our focus group of trying to balance, I guess, independence in the while talking to the physician or being in the physician and having to have help. So you have people there, if you can imagine, like, three or four people in the room while you're being uncomfortable taking an exam. So kind of how to balance the uneasiness that someone might have having all those people in the room, but still trying to get your answers to your questions and having a proper conversation with your physician.
I also think there were
who was responsible for bringing that help? If you went to a physician, would you expect medical care to have nurse's aides, medical assistants to come in? You could talk to the doctor one-on-one and so forth, but do you have to bring in your mother, your brother, your dad? I mean, that's an exaggeration, but I mean, are you responsible to do that, or is it the responsibility of the medical? Because it wouldn't, those questions, if you had medical staff there, it wouldn't be embarrassing. It became embarrassing, I think, when they had their own family or people, they didn't really want to talk about these sensitive issues, or just private to them. Mm-hmm. So that's that was another issue there.
Yeah.
My husband and I have been struggling with infertility since we got married. We want children very, very badly, but the syndrome I had comes with blindness, some physical impairment, and lack of pituitary gland essentially. So there's all kinds of hormones that just don't get produced. So basically, when you're when women with disabilities in our group, we're talking about just extra things you might have to deal with in pregnancy because of having physical disabilities, how that affects being able to conceive and things like that.
And I think the couple of women, you know, had disabilities or genetic problems that where they couldn't, or they were, or they could, but it wasn't easy, and it wasn't. It was, I think, probably like for most women, it was complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And not even just have them, but to raise them. Could they adopt? You know, could they adopt? Would anyone allow them to adopt? And what all that meant. And it was not. Again, I don't think it's simple for any woman, but it's just additional layer of complication. For something that this family really, really wanted it, and you know, and she, you know, she's unable to get a lot of care that she needs because it's very expensive.
Right. So there was a lot of discussion about how those who can do and those who don't have can't, and so there was a lot of discussion about that piece of it that she had shared related to healthcare expenses.
And also going back to the whole support thing and finding peers that have gone through what you hope to go through in the future and seeing what goes on, what went on in their experience and how you can attribute that to yours.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the last theme is how much environmental barriers are a problem for getting needed care.
I always feel like I'm sort of searching for things, like things are too high, wide, to get up and down off the tables, and that kind of thing. But the thing is, they expect that you're not going to be able to. So I try really hard to. It's like putting your feet over, knowing that something's down there, having no clue where it is, and just sliding off and hoping that you land.
I love that last sentence. I love it. Because, I mean, that really summed up how she felt in trying to do things for herself. Yeah. It's a great image. I mean, it's not a great image. It's an image that's very powerful, I should say.
clearly explained and understood.
There were lots of these. I didn't put this in the theme, that coding structure, but we have a good quote structure because there were some things that were just beautifully said we didn't want to lose.
One of the participants going off of this said, I'm just dangling here, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get down or what, and if I jump down, what if I get hurt and things like that. Mm-hmm. That's not her exact quote, but
I think they like left her in the room.
Yeah, they left her in the room.
And then she was just
dangling on the table. Okay, what am I
going to
do?
I lied. Wait, sorry. Go ahead. Then there's one more theme.
Okay. The only frustration I find is just time. it's more time consuming these days too, because I have to be physically transferred into an accessible table, or like my spasms. I don't want to kick the doctor in the face while I'm trying to get in the stirrups. And it's just more like an embarrassing factor, I guess, and it's just more time consuming. So basically, like, again, all the extra factors that people just can't.
Yeah, and I think there was also the piece of that they don't give the time. So, you know, our medical care is so segmented. This is how much time you have per patient and how fast it has to go. But if given the proper amount of time and the proper encouragement or supports and help, you can manage and do the activities that are needed in that particular clinic setting. But it's not always, those two pieces are not always in line with one another.
And this is the last theme. So needing more information to make good decisions about this area of health.
Actually, this is sad. I've never gotten to the point with any healthcare providers where I'm like, okay, so I can tell that this is not off, off limits. And these are some questions I have, because by the time they get through their discomfort, my discomfort, I've never had a relationship with the healthcare provider to be like, yeah, and can I actually have a baby? I still don't know if I can have a baby. So a lot of this has to go with the knowledge of the physician and also the patient, because the physician may have questions, but the patient may also have questions too about different things in their life that they might want to be able to explore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is I didn't know how to tag this, but it's really good, so I put it in here.
You don't know. You come into this world, or at least, this participant, she had a brain injury, I think, from a car accident. So she's talking about coming into being a person with a disability. You don't know. You come into this world, at least I felt like I did, just totally in the dark. You have no idea, like a deer in headlights. You just don't know what to expect, and you don't know until you hear from people with experience what to expect. Or you just fall on your own, and not to go that way. I am lucky to have many friends with disabilities, and we always just kind of bounce back ideas, struggles, and triumphs. And just what works for some won't work for everyone. So basically, again, going into the peer support and learning how to navigate having a disability along with all the other things you have to deal with.
Okay. So that's a snapshot, a really tiny little snapshot of all the things that the women told us. But like I said, we heard a lot of the same themes. So then the question is, where do we go next? And that's something that, we'd like to hear from anyone, their ideas about what ways this can be better. So if we did this 10 years from now, women would have had a different experience.
This may sound like it doesn't fit, but it does. When I was growing up and my first menstrual period came along, I didn't know what it was, just blood running down my legs. And I was taken by the collar and forced into the bathroom and told, stay there. And then one of those big, thick Kotex pads was thrown in there, put it in your pants and don't tell anybody about it. Mm. So going from that experience, like, what the heck is this? And feeling very alone and not understanding it as what's part of caring and nurturing this body, to have a deeper appreciation for it psychologically, spiritually. We need this before we think of babies. Mm-hmm. And after we can't have babies. I'm in that bracket right now. And so why would I want to what do I have that's precious about my body or the guy's body, whatever guy, you know, might choose to be with. Mm-hmm. And I'm at a point where my sex organs have been damaged a couple of times, real bad. Plus, I'm beyond the reproductive stages, so I'm looking at what is it about my life, whether it's about these issues of gynecology. But that's part of being being a female human mm-hmm. being, to cherish, to love what I have as that female gender.
All of you, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And want to share that. And right here, right now, in what I've shared, is I'm seeing, you know, there's some big barriers there about what I feel open to doing with this female body. And I don't know how to go beyond that. It's painful because I feel trapped.
I can't
participate. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that experience of yourself is related to larger issues of culture, of, you know, family culture or the larger culture around you or disability culture or any, you know?
Well, of course, it all goes together. It's mm-hmm. all of the above.
Yeah.
And I do understand one big thing, but it's sort of out there beyond me, and I'm grabbing for it, is I have to be bold. I have to come out with my heart and head, put them all together, and really prize this precious self. And really, I don't know if it's a matter of teaching or being together with others who realize that, and it's not something that women down through the ages have been encouraged to mm-hmm. do. We've been taught how dirty sex is and different things that, while we want to think they don't exist anymore, those who are of age remember that stuff, and it's hard mm-hmm. to come up from that, especially when you've been hurt physically, damaged.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, when you don't have a reason mm-hmm. for sharing your body, that's the, oh, well, I really don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm finished. Mm-hmm. But we're not finished. Not in any way. And this is, goes beyond the gynecology.
It does.
We're not finished. We have a life.
Right.
And whatever quality of life that may be. Well, first of all, it's for me to interpret what that is. But how will I learn that? Well, I'll learn by listening to others, appreciate their life.
And, you know, your experience, or that, you know, that generational experience of, you know, when you were younger, but we heard that from several women who are in their 20s. And it's the same, and especially with, and this, you know, comes from not so much research I've done, but that I know about, is particularly among families of children with developmental disabilities. When that menstruation comes, there's a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. A lot of anxiety about her being vulnerable, being taken advantage of.
You're responsible.
And,
you did something.
Yeah, and so, but among some of the women in our group said, you know, like, nobody talked to me about this. Another woman who did an interview, she wasn't in a group, said, you know, I'm a Catholic. I'm a Catholic girl, and, you know, and I had a disability. And we actually had an exchange of, like, well, did you not talk about sex when you were younger because you were Catholic or because you were, you know, and she's like, it was a lot of it was because of her Catholicism and the family. But she said, you know, like, no one imagined that girls with disabilities have sex. So it just doesn't come up, or the family's anxious about it. So it is still something that, and even irrespective of disability, it still happens. And then that ability to appreciate all of you and all the variations of the way we are really can be, you know, minimized.
The big motivator for me right now is knowing that, how can I say this, is wanting to live as fully as possible, whatever that means, whether it's this or something else, but this is a big part of it. You
of
know?
Course. And that's everybody, you know.
I'm not going to go out and just experiment.
Yeah,
it comes with what do I think of myself and how do I feel about mm-hmm. the stuff.
And so, like we had said, and, you know, as we were reading through these, this idea about this internal dialogue mm-hmm. that a woman has with herself. That then, as we started to think about it, we're like, oh, there it is again, and there mm-hmm. it is again, and there it is again. And then it gets tangled up in what others think and others say, and, oh, maybe they're right. Maybe I, you know, like that one of the first quotes, maybe I can't have a baby. I thought I could, but mm-hmm. maybe I can't. So it's not none of this is a simple thing. But you can see the downstream impact of not talking about these things or feeling embarrassed or ashamed. And it does not have good lifelong effect. Yeah, right. And the, yeah.
Did you say feeling worthy?
Unworthy.
Yeah,
feeling
right.
unworthy.
And like Claire said, the participant that she was talking about, I think she said, no one wants to think about mm-hmm. and girls with disabilities getting it on.
Yeah, getting it on. So it just doesn't come up. Or yeah. she's the one that said the doctor was relieved when I said, no, I'm not sexually active. Well, thank God. We just keep moving on. And it was an interest. That, she was the first one who had said that, that specifically, that when they asked, they were relieved. She was very perceptive, I think, about how the healthcare providers reacted to her. Mm-hmm. You know, she wasn't doing anything. I mean, she was doing what is very typical to do. But she could pick up on their discomfort very quickly. She was very insightful. That was interesting. Any other thoughts?
I have a question.
I want to know if the PowerPoint slide would be available for us.
Yeah, I can send. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we can send it to if you signed in with your email. We're happy to forward it.
Show me which one, and mm-hmm. we can send it. So, what is your interest in this area? Yeah. So there's only a few of us here. Yeah. If you're willing to share.
Well, my name is Tanisha. I'm the Supported Living Program Coordinator for Community Alliance. Hmm. And I work with adults with developmental disabilities. And we have a few female consumers who we serve. And mm-hmm. we just came to find out some more information and maybe concerns that they have that they're not able to express to mm-hmm. us. So.
Yeah,
we just came
that's
to
great.
Get information.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I think one of the big things is to be open and to be able to say that it's okay for them to share when they have mm-hmm. questions or concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah, it makes me think. We didn't put any of the. Well, like I said, there were so many quotes, but one of the women that were part of our group communicated through a assistive device, and she had a pretty severe disability. But you know, I think you were there. What she expressed, and right, you know, you would, and it wasn't quick for her to express stuff. We paused and waited for her to put everything into the computer, but like she had wanted to donate her eggs, and they were like, you know, we don't want them because of the way she looked. But this or it was something, and I think this happened, you know, like that would even occur to her, and then I think I don't know who if I asked, you know, well, why what was. You know, what? Why did you want to do that? I don't remember what I said, but she said, I wanted to leave part of me behind. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole group was like, oh. And so I think that speaks to you that there are all these feelings inside that may not get directly expressed because mm-hmm. no one's asking, because no one's assuming, particularly among women who may not really be able to articulate how they think and feel in a way that reflects the complexity of it. It doesn't mean that they're not feeling it because they don't have the words to say it. So I think it's great that. Yeah, right.
I guess that's what
right.
we're hearing.
Yeah.
I guess where do we go from here? Maybe one of the things we're talking about is.
They're recording us. That's why you're getting the mic in.
Oh, educating. Well, I have a pretty loud voice. Educating the doctors mm-hmm. or giving some kind of education
yeah.
or. Maybe even having the medical schools be opened up so they know that disability people with disabilities do come and get medical care. And, you know, that is something that they will experience so they don't have to be so shocked.
Yeah.
And I think you talked about having some kind of outline maybe in the future so they would be able to go through it. So they see someone with a certain disability, they could read through the questions and be able to, you know, have a better sensitivity to the patient, since that's what it's supposed to be about, and get help with the care and to be able to open up the dialogue mm-hmm. and make the comfort there.
Mm-hmm.
So educating the medical professionals and also to have the resources for the medical mm-hmm. professionals.
Right. Mm-hmm.
As for the patients too, but I think that's
there isn't
been
there
discussed.
Isn't there isn't much. That's
yeah,
the problem,
that's
what
you said, and that's the support groups and so forth. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be redundant.
Yeah, it's okay.
So I mean one of the things that I mean we hope that will happen is that we have an email that everybody who's also seeing this repeated online could write to if they have questions or comments. You could write to womenshealth@umich.edu. womenshealth@umich.edu, and that will come to us as the research team to get that information.
You know, it's not. Our personal emails are on there, so okay. You can
also write our personal emails, but they're talking, for those who are seeing this on tape, there's a handout that's available. If you also write to womenshealth@umich.edu, we would be happy to get information to you and make sure that everybody has that.
So one thing I'll mention, I don't have the final approval yet, but one of the things I think Gail alluded to is one of the projects that I've submitted to the National Institutes of Health is to develop a health-related quality of life measurement tool that is patient-centered outcomes, and that will be, I'm trying to put this simply, so that what we will host focus groups like this, and from what women say, just like what we showed you, we create items that are part of a questionnaire, and in the end, it produces a brief report that is then shared with the physician and the woman, and so that they can sit together and say, hey, you know, this area is really, you know, compared to other women, you're really low, what's going on here? So that it helps to bring up topics that maybe aren't that comfortable to bring up spontaneously or the physician doesn't think. And one of my colleagues who's a gynecologist, we had a conversation early on in developing the project, and she said, well, if I'm in with somebody, and this is a woman, she sees women with disabilities, she says, if I say your period's normal, she says, okay, and then I just keep going because that's the right answer, and I don't necessarily stop to think that if you use a wheelchair, are you able to, you know, be independent and changing things? Does it impact your life so that on a day you're having your period, you actually can't go to work because you can't change it, you know, change your, maybe your hygiene the same. So that really stuck with me when she said that. And this is a gynecologist who is totally into this population. And even for her, because it's such a standard thing, she wouldn't necessarily stop to ask that second question. And also she said, if you produce a report, you gotta tell me where to go. Like, it's not enough to say this is a problem. Well, now then you gotta give me some way to solve it.
Yeah.
And that will be part of like the next generation of that project, is then someone's not sure what contraception to use. She uses a wheelchair. She's at risk for blood clots. Well, now what do I do? And to allow that physician to go link to resources that don't exist much to at least help them make decisions about what to do next. And so they don't turn away and they're like, well, you know, the internet says that she really is able to have a dialogue.
Right, and then be able to make an informed choice as the patient. So the patient can have all those options.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that I know for, again, I'll use myself in this, and I can use others that we've worked with in the Ann Arbor CIL about being able to be your own best advocate, is that when you know the information and then you can have a forward conversation about it, then you get to make the choice.
Mm-hmm.
It may be ultimately that there are few choices sometimes, or there may be lots of choices, but the opportunity to make those choices only comes when you're given the opportunity to have the knowledge, and when you have the knowledge, then you have the power to make decisions in your life. And so that's sort of part of that piece that we want to try to help figure out, is how do we make sure that women with disabilities aren't being treated in a way that is not giving them that power to make decisions in their lives.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts for us to take forward? Because I'm not done yet. I have years of doing this ahead of me.
Where to go to the future, like the communication, the education. Mm-hmm. Seems like educating, you know, some of the doctors that are around now that are older doctors that may not get it, mm-hmm. but there's a whole world of young physicians mm-hmm. that are coming up, and how
Absolutely.
To get a hold of them, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, talk to them and educate them. And you know, and I was just thinking about the time that, like, you have 20 minutes. I don't know what the time frame is when you go see the doctor, but like with someone with a disability, you know, it might take me 20 minutes just to get in the room and get my clothes off and have somebody help me get up on the mm-hmm. table. And you know, my 20 minutes is up, and then what, you know? But like when, you know, like being in school and having a disability, you get extra time to go from class to class, you know, right. And that's, you know, why not have extra time in mm-hmm. a doctor's office mm-hmm. if you have a need for it? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. otherwise, because it's a violation of my civil rights if I'm not, you know, given the same opportunity that someone has without a disability mm-hmm. just because I can't physically... you know, just jump up on the table, and it's going to take me 2 minutes to get undressed and get on the table, where I said it's going to take me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so,
sort of
you know,
systems thing, yeah.
Something like that. And, you know, I think about U of M, it's such a great teaching hospital, the University of Michigan, that, you know, specifically like going to some of the, you know, the gynecologists, and if they have conferences and stuff, you know, like how you said you went and talked to mm-hmm. to the conference, and, you know, kind of breaking it down within the organization that I belong to, Little People of America, they've been doing studies since 1968, starting with John Hopkins Hospital, genetic study. But there's we have like our own set of OBGYNs, and we have like a referral list. So, mm-hmm. is, you know, if you need to see a gynecologist, these would be ones that would be good in your area and mm-hmm. something like that to identify them. And I know probably with some of the other organizations or with other disabilities, there may be a bigger organization where they may have some information that you could kind of tap mm-hmm. into, too. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, some thoughts.
Yeah, so beyond getting the tool that the physician can use, but getting tools out to the community so the community is aware of resources that are mm-hmm. also available the other direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of discussions where they're insurance companies, so it's nice to educate all the doctors and hopefully have an ethics within the teaching and at the medical schools that would do that, because sometimes you don't have those options. Mm-hmm. So depending on your insurance, certainly mm-hmm. the couple of study groups that I went to, they talked about that mm-hmm. a lot, or their insurance company covered a doctor they loved, they were with them, and then all of a sudden they had to go find the insurance change and had no fault of their own, and they had to start over, and that was very, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. disheartening and difficult for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So educating the medical great professionals. That's where well, I think it's where we should go.
Yeah. U of M is, I don't know if you all heard, totally revamping medical education. Totally. Turning it upside down and changing all of it to make, I don't really understand all of it, but like, you know, to create more with an emphasis on patient communication and creativity and, you know, and being more really meeting the challenge of the complexities of systems today. So it's, I unfortunately, I'm sure it's out in the press of how they're doing it, but it's starting this year, I think, and with the new classes starting
in
the spring.
And with people living longer and having such great medical care like at U of M, disabled people are more out in the community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's older people, which puts them in wheelchairs and needing the same. Even if you're old, you still need OBGYN, even in your 70s and 80s, 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that with them saving people during
people
after accidents,
longer.
At birth and stuff. So there's
growing.
A bigger complexity, and they're outliving. I remember couple of diseases, I won't mention them, but they didn't live through childhood. Now, mm-hmm. I know people who have cystic fibrosis is one of them, I guess I can say, and they never lived through childhood. I have a friend who's 50, and I mean, they just never lived that long, so you're finding more and more diseases that are coming through, so that makes it worth everyone's while, because medicine's also being switched commercially, because there's so many of them, and insurance and Obamacare, where they have to compete. You know, everyone's getting them, and you want people to come into you. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about, you know, I know my my department chair specializes in cerebral palsy, and there's this big push about, you know, care for adults with CP, because they're like, well, what, you know, I mean, you weren't living long enough. I mean, you know this.
Yeah.
And now, so there's like very few people that are ready to take care of these adults. You know better than me.
I did a speech to future physicians.
Yeah,
and that was
great.
One of the things that I told them was, don't forget about us after 18.
Yeah.
Because
we keep going.
We're still alive. We're still here. So just don't. I know you probably want to focus on kids and being cute and all that, but also think about adults as they get older and how aging affects the disability.
And how transitions need to happen. And so just like we have transitions for teenagers in general, we have to remember about transitions for people with disabilities, and so that matters for healthcare as well, that there's transitions throughout life at different stages. And so even when we talk about aging as an example, a lot of times we hear about things for people who are older, but aging starts from when you're born. Aging starts from when you were conceived. So aging is always a transition, and so being able to be open about how we're going to look at our care for the future really matters. And so I really thank Claire for being a co-PI with me on this, because we certainly have seen these issues for a long time, and we were able to get this pilot study, and we want to thank MISHAR for that. MISHAR is the Michigan Institute for Clinical Health Research, which granted the pilot study to happen along with the collaboration of both the University of Michigan Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation with the Ann Arbor Center for Independent Living. And, of course, our community advocates, advisors, research assistants, and all of the participants and those of you that are here, we're able to continue to move forward in some of this dialogue because we are able to continue to seek that funding, and we're looking forward to Claire being able to continue the community-engaged research that she has been so dedicated to and devoted to bringing this out to the public. So we're happy to be partners with the community on this.
Okay. Without further ado, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it. Hope this has been enlightening.
Thank you.